going to provide a large amount of carbohydrates. And primarily, these are going to be these complex carbohydrates that we call fiber. The other source of carbohydrates are going to be more of our simple carbohydrates that we find as sugars and starches, like what we see in our cereal grains. And so I know corn was mentioned. Corn is actually not all that commonly fed to a lot of horses anymore. Some diets still include it because it's cheap, but corn, beyond any risk.
Hey guys, it's Mandy with Global Hemp Association. I wanted to say thank you so much for joining. I'm excited about the opportunity to build a relationship and connect this supply chain. I mean, after all, that's why we started the association. Our association was built on the foundation of connecting supply chain, building relationships, and helping you grow your business. Anyone from farmers, manufacturers, and distributors, people that are passionate about the supply chain, and those creating products selling into biofuels, plastics, textiles, construction, and building materials.
And we're live. Hi, guys. I'm so excited to be here. And welcome back, Morgan. I'm glad to have you back on again. And welcome, Dr. Phillips. I'm glad to have you on as well. Hello, everybody, and thank you for joining. When you do chime in today, please let us know where you're chiming in for. I'm really excited about this conversation and the efforts that Hempfeed Coalition and both Morgan and Dr. Phillips are putting in to open up the market for feed and grain for the equine market. Or equine market. Did I say that right?
Yeah.
Industry vertical, I guess, of the feed. Okay. So anyways, before I go on and on too much, I want to remind everybody to please donate or go to our Friends of Hemp website, friendsofhemp.org, and make a donation. Right now we have a dollar for dollar match available. So it'll double any donation that goes forward to our seed trials, our fiber and grain seed trials that we're doing. We have an awesome article that we're getting ready to publish that's going out in the National Industrial Association of Crop Consultants. That's who we have contracted with to do all of our seed trials, and or a lot of their members to do our seed trials. And so it's pretty exciting article. It shows kind of some of the progress about what's happening across the nation. Some of our trials are doing very, very good. Others we've had weather complications, of course, like what we're seeing. Morgan, by the way, I can't believe what's happening up in your area with both flood and drought. It's crazy that it's such a contrast. And so I'm definitely praying for our farmers. But please go and support our efforts and definitely contribute to the efforts of the Hemp Feed Coalition that both Morgan and Dr. Phillips are going to dive into a little bit more, because their efforts are incredibly important. So without further ado, I'd love to hand it over for an intro. Dr. Phillips, I'd love for you to tell us a little bit about who you are and what you do and what brought you into this industry.
Yeah, for sure. So hi, I'm Shannon Pratt Phillips, and I am a professor of equine nutrition at North Carolina State University. So I have been studying equine nutrition for about 30 years, and I've been at State since 2006. And my job is split between teaching students who want to either go to vet school or work in the horse industry, as well as doing research on various topics of nutrition in order to feed our horses better. And I also have a graduate program. So I have students who come and work with me so that they can earn master's degrees and PhDs in equine nutrition and go off and start their own careers. And so a lot of the research that I do, some of it is research that is maybe sort of basic feeding information. But I also do some research as it comes along, looking at various nutrients or ingredients to try to figure out the effects of some of these nutrients on horses. And I was involved in a fairly large study a few years ago where we put a feed ingredient through all of the feeding trials in AFCO to get it approved as a feed ingredient. And I think that kind of helped sort of pick me, or sort of perhaps I was noticed to join in with the Hemp Feed Coalition to help figure out how we could do similar things for hemp products, the oil and the meal, et cetera, for horses. So I'm here today.
Awesome. Well, thank you so much for joining. Morgan, you want to take over, or you want to kind of make an intro for anybody that doesn't know Morgan?
Yeah. Thanks, Mandy. I appreciate it. Yeah. So for the general me, my name is Morgan Tweet. So I am the CEO of a company called IND Hemp. We're located in central Montana. And I also have the privilege of being the executive director of the Hemp Feed Coalition. So we have been working with Dr. Phillips for a while now. I wish that we had more progress to share with you guys, but we'll go into more details today about why, you know, the process, why it takes so long and things like that. But, you know, we really at HFC, we try to do a good job of connecting the experts in the field to let the science lead the conversation. You know, what's so great about people like Dr. Phillips is they get to come to this conversation at kind of a neutral, new evaluation of these ingredients. You know, us in the industry, we drank the Kool-Aid, right? We think this thing is great. We think it can cure the world. But it's great to hear and see other experts coming from their field evaluating these ingredients from a completely different perspective. And that's really what our regulators are looking for, right? They want to make sure that we're introducing safe and efficacy trials that are proving that these ingredients are worthy to bring into market. And so I'm really excited to share more to you guys today about what HFC is doing, and then really just let Dr. Phillips share more about like what is the nutritional needs of a horse? Why would we even consider this market? Where does hemp have a place to play? And although we may not have as many answers to speak to directly about the ingredients itself, I think conceptually we can really dive into the equine market, what those consumers are looking for, what are the needs, the nutritional benefits that are lacking in the current marketplace, what are the incumbent materials or ingredients that are there. And then as an industry, we should be able to leverage that information to create the quickest pathway to approval and the quickest pathway for market adoption. So I'm just gonna share a quick little slideshow with you guys. Hopefully, you know, if you have any questions, definitely shoot them over in the comments box. Mandy, you do a fantastic job of facilitating these conversations. So I know we're in good hands. And just also really want to thank you for, you know, extending the offer to the Hemp Feed Coalition. We have some great sponsors and people that participate, and we, you know, really value associations like GHA that can just, you know, collaboratively try to move the needle. There's a lot of work that all of us are trying to do, and so sharing resources when we can is really important, and I appreciate your openness to always do that with HFC. So.
Absolutely. And we're thankful for the information, right? This is a topic we have not focused on because our efforts are to support organizations like yours. And so I put out a call to please go out and support this effort because it is so important for opening the market for the entire industry, not yes. just the animal feed. But this yeah. is a huge piece as opening doors for our industry. So, yeah.
Well, I know that people have heard from me before, so I'll try and be quick. But if you don't mind, I'll share my screen really quick. Yes. All right. Can everyone see my screen?
Yes.
All right. Good deal. I do have to give a little shout out. That's my husband and one of our friends' kids. So he's a good looking cowboy, as I'd like to say. but like I said, this is horse nutrition and hemp seed oil is what we're really trying to dive into today. So just a real brief overview of all the ingredients that we can derive from the hemp seed and what we're looking at. So these are averages the Hemp Feed Coalition has pulled together, looking at different varietals across different locations. There's still speculation, I think, out there that these would change dependent on the varietal, which, you know, I think that we're going to see more companies really breeding for special amino acids or fatty acid profiles. But just that this is the basis, I think that's really a good average to look at. So from the seed oil perspective, looking at the omega fatty acid breakdown from hemp pulls, the crude protein, fiber, and fat. Dr. Phillips showed this great table with me about, you know, in comparison to what like some of the incumbent materials are in feed. Right now we see a lot of beet pulp and rice bran on the market. So, you know, if you're looking at including hemp hulls instead, you know, really competitive there. Hemp protein has a really diverse and complete amino acid profile. So, but just crude protein, fiber, and fat kind of are there. Some other things that people may not speak about as often are these other nutrients that make hemp really special. So the really strong mineral package and vitamins, I think that is another reason why, you know, just on a nutritional level, you know, hemp can compete. It does have a place to play, and we're excited to see the market open up and the regulations kind of allow for these ingredients so that manufacturers and mills can start incorporating these into their feedstocks. Really, today we're trying to talk about the hemp seed oil opportunity. So this is a table you may have seen before. I think it's really descriptive, kind of in comparison. Flax is probably one of the most known omega supplements on the market, in the equine market especially. Has a really high omega-3 content. It does affect some of the shelf life stability. It can go rancid a little bit more quickly. But you can kind of see that unique profile. There's a gamma linoleic acid and some other things that hemp is just a little bit more diverse on. So hopefully Dr. Phillips can speak to that and maybe what does that mean in a horse diet and why do we care about that? Some benefits that we know just off the cuff. Some of this is anecdotal, but some of it's also proven from data. You know, Canada has had it legally available for them for many years now. And so we see a lot of users in Canada and some of the benefits that they have. What we hear is it helps with digestion. We see improvements in coat and hoof health, improved immune systems, hormone balance, joint function, insulin metabolism, and healthy brain function. So all those things, I think every horse owner out there wants to have that and see that in their diet. And so I think now the opportunity for the scientists is really to optimize that. What is the great ratio? How does hemp complement other ingredients, right? I don't think hemp is the end all be all solution, but if you complement it with other proteins, other, you know, fat sources, you know, that's really where I think the opportunity in the market is once we get past regulation, is finding these optimized feed rations. And real quick about market opportunity, you know, it may not seem like a lot, but just equine supplements are $80 to $90 million. That's not even looking at the feed opportunity, which I think is far more scalable. Let's just say hemp in the next 5 years, we can grow to 10% of that. That's $8 to $9 million just in the equine supplement market here in the US. So the other really cool thing about the equine market, it's very diverse. You know, we have everything from show horses to equestrian to utility and rodeo, even just companion horses. And the great thing is, you know, each of those sectors has their own need and want that they're going to be looking for. But across the board, right, we want to have healthy horses. We want to see improved in performance, longevity. And I think that, you know, these different ingredients and the applications and then the finished feed products or supplement products can be manipulated to really, you know, target those individual demographics. And then why we're raising money and why we would like for you to get behind it is we need to get an application through. So for those of you who may not have heard me talk before in the past, you know, we're going for an AFCO application. So AFCO is the association that kind of federally manages new ingredients that come to the market. The state departments of agriculture usually have, they are the regulating body in your state, but they look to this group, which is, you know, a collection of these Department of Ag regulators. They also have like toxicologists and veterinarians, and they work with FDA CVM. So they're really looking for the experts at FDA CVM to give them guidance on whether or not an ingredient is safe, whether they should approve it. But, you know, you go across the board to any mill, any feed plant, and the first thing they ask is, well, do you have AFCO approval? And so it's kind of like the golden ticket to get any application or to get any ingredient to scale is you need to have that stamp of approval. And so in an AFCO application, you know, we have to define the ingredient. And so HFC, we put forth our first application in 2020 for hemp seed meal for chickens, for laying hens specifically. So you have to define the ingredient. You have to say, okay, this is the averages. This is the contaminant table. This is, you know, how it's processed. And it's very specific how you make that. And so what's great about the Hemp Feed Coalition is we have a, you know, collective members who, you know, can add and facilitate in those applications and writing that so that we make sure that we're collectively talking for the industry. And then we spend money to do several certificates of analysis. You know, like we want to go across the board, different varietals, different locations. And so, you know, it's costing us anywhere between $5,000 to $15,000 just in those certificates of analysis. Fortunately, we have been really progressive in that. And we've looked at multiple ingredients. Oil has already done a lot of that data has been collected. So we don't necessarily have as much money in upfront right now for that. But the really big ticket item, obviously, is that safety and efficacy study and why Dr. Phillips was approached a couple of years ago about potentially hosting a research study for us. So the Langhin application, you know, we had a similar study that cost Wanger Feeds and Kreider out of Pennsylvania. They were a fantastic partner. They paid for that study for us. And so we really are looking for partners, people that have that see the value opportunity of opening up the market in the equine sector. And we need assistance in getting to that dollar amount. So it's hard for one company to really carry the burden of a $200,000 safety study. So I feel like the coalition is the right vehicle to get multiple people who are invested in this. You know, maybe we can't give $200,000, but maybe we can give 20. And not only are you helping fund the study, but you're also helping, you know, craft that application. And so you're getting to have that one-on-one conversation with FDA CVM. You're understanding it. You know, the coalition, we try to be really open with our members and we want everyone to participate. You know, we all want to see something come across the finish line. And then there is a consulting fee that I want to throw in there. Just, you know, we go to veterinarians and toxicologists and we have them review these studies. And the reason we do that is because we don't want to go through all this effort to get an application in and then have CVMs, toxicologists, or veterinarians kick it back to us because we didn't answer X, Y, Z. And so we do the extra step of you know, reviewing it internally with those experts so that we know when we get an application back to, or over to FDA CVM, the likelihood of it getting approved is very high. So, you know, collectively, we're looking at potentially $250,000 to get an application into FDA CVM's hands. And most of us here in the hemp industry, you know, none of us are rolling in the dough quite yet. And so that's a big chunk. It's a heavy burden. And so we just want to be transparent with why are we raising funds? I know everyone's like heard it, right? Like we all need money. Like, you know, we're a little bit of a broken record. But hopefully, you know, Dr. Phillips, you can share with us of like, really, there is a big opportunity here, and the fruit is relatively low hanging, and there's multiple companies that can benefit from this, and really at the end of the day, this is a really great ingredient that we hope our horses can benefit from as well. So, mm-hmm. I'll stop sharing and let you talk.
Yeah. So yeah, that was a great introduction. I kind of thought, you know, as you were going over things, it might be a good idea just for those of you who maybe are more hemp people than horse people to kind of talk about what nutrients horses require and how they traditionally get them, and then kind of talk about some little niches and areas where hemp could actually fit in there. And then I'll talk a little bit about the research studies that we've got planned up. But so horses, like all animals, are going to require nutrients that they have to consume to have various functions of the body. Water is the given. And then we kind of get into sort of broad groups, carbohydrates, fats, protein, vitamins, and minerals. Now, the only actual function of carbohydrates is to provide a substrate for calorie or energy production. And so carbohydrates, as well as fats to a large degree, their major, carbohydrate, its only role in the body once it's sort of metabolized and the glucose is absorbed is for energy production. And fats can do a couple different things, but those two substrates are going to be the largest contribution towards calories. And so when we have performance horses, any horse that is doing anything beyond hanging out in their field, they are going to have higher calorie requirements. And so when we think about our carbohydrates, we can, really think about where those are coming from. And so for most horses, those carbohydrate sources are going to be our forages. So that's traditionally things like hay and pasture, maybe things like haylage or other high fiber types of feeds like beet pulp or rice bran. And this could be an area where, high fiber feed, you know, hemp fibers could fit in there too. But so horses primarily through evolution and, you know, into today's world, the bulk part of their diet is actually coming from hay and pasture. And so this is going to provide a large amount of carbohydrates. And primarily these are going to be these complex carbohydrates that we call fiber. The other source of carbohydrates are going to be more of our simple carbohydrates that we find as sugars and starches, like what we see in our cereal grains. And so I know corn was mentioned. Corn is actually not all that commonly fed to a lot of horses anymore. Some diets still include it because it's cheap. Corn, beyond any risk of toxins, and most of the good feed companies will test for that anyway. Corn is just really high in starch. And when we think about the sources of calories for horses, and we're comparing things like fiber versus starch, there are some horses that don't do very well getting a lot of their carbohydrates from starch. And so we tend to prefer to feed them more of their calories coming from fiber. Yes, I see sweet feeds. And so those are going to contain a lot of our cereal grains. But so the starches and the sugars and then the fibers are going to be the large part of the carbohydrate product for energy. The other part of that is going to be coming from oil. And so oil has got more than 2.5 times the energy per unit weight than carbohydrates. And so it's an excellent source of calories. And so as we think about diets that are going to be for performance horses, any horse that's doing a lot more work, they're going to have higher inclusion rates of oil just because it's such an efficient source of calories. So that's our sort of calorie world in terms of nutrients. So coming from carbohydrates and then coming from oils. Oil itself can have some sort of other benefits in terms of omega fatty acid profile. So when we think about the structure, the chemical structure of a fat, it's actually this carbon chain. All of these carbons are going to be linked together, and there are going to be different numbers of carbons in these chains. And so, for example, linolenic acid or some of these common fatty acids are going to be sort of 18 carbon long, 20 carbons long. Meanwhile, some other fats might be quite a bit shorter. When we think about the fats that we associate with, for example, fish oil, some of those are getting into the 20 and 22, even 24 carbon chains. And then the structure of those chains can vary too. So instead of carbons being attached to each other and then having hydrogens also attached to them, you can have these double bonds. And so those become unsaturated fats when they've got double bonds between these two carbon units. And so we've probably all heard that these polyunsaturated fatty acids are good for our health. And then the omega term, the omega-6, the omega-3s, that designates where on that chain that first double bond is. So for example, omega-3, that first double bond is three carbons from the end of that chain, and omega-6 is from six units in. And it's important because some of these double bonds cannot be formed within the body. So the animal has to actually consume them. And so traditionally, when we think of oils, we're thinking of calories, but there is also this sort of nutritional need for some of these specific omega-3 and omega-6 fatty acids. Now, we don't have a numeric value. We can say a horse needs 720 grams of protein, for example, or 20 grams of calcium, but we don't know how many grams or milligrams a horse needs of omega-3 or a specific omega-3 or omega-6 yet. So that's sort of the oil world. When I wanted to go back and talk about the carbohydrate world, we've talked about carbohydrates being used for calories, but it's also important to remember that those complex carbohydrates are fiber, even though they're not necessarily used inside the animal. Those fiber pieces, fiber, cellulose, for example, the bonds within those fiber particles are indigestible by mammalian enzymes. So they carry on through the horse's digestive tract to the large intestine. And this is where horses have this huge vat of microbial organisms, very similar to what a cow has or ruminants have in their foregut. Horses that have it at the back. And horses need to have that fiber, not just to sort of feed these microbes, But that fiber also just keeps that horse's digestive tract healthy. It keeps them, maintains the pH. It maintains those microbial populations to a point where if a horse does not have enough fiber in their diet, they can get sick. And so fiber itself is kind of a weird thing because it's not actually, required as a nutrient because it doesn't get into the horse specifically, but that fiber moving through the horse's digestive tract is very important. And so that's potentially another area where some of the fibers that are found in hemp could be beneficial just to help keep that horse's digestive tract healthy. Another major group of nutrition is the protein. And so protein is basically, I always tell students that it's like words. So different proteins are like words. And within every word or within every protein, there are, in words, we have all of our different letters. In proteins, we have these different amino acids. And so you take all of those different amino acids, you put them in different orders, and you can make different proteins. And they can be very short proteins or very long proteins, depending on how many amino acids are within them. And again, just like our words, we've got 26 letters, and some of them are more important. So for example, the vowels are really important. You can't do, you can't make a whole lot of words without vowels. And so when we relate that to protein, our vowels are kind of like these essential amino acids. And so an essential amino acid is something that's not provided for in the, or that the body can't make on their own. And so they have to be included in the diet. So you might've heard of some essential amino acids for horses. The key one being lysine, but methionine, threonine, leucine. Some of these are some other essential amino acids that the body can't make themselves. And so they have to be provided for in the diet. And so for example, something like soybean meal has got about 44% protein. Meanwhile, hemp seed meal has got 40%. So it's kind of similar. Soybean meal definitely has a little bit more lysine. It's got a little bit more threonine. But then hemp seed meal is a very good source of methionine, a little bit more so to soybean meal. But it is a very good source of these specific amino acids. Because, even though a horse might need 720 grams of protein, if they were getting 2,000 grams of protein, but if they were not getting enough lysine, that horse would not be able to do very well. So it's really important that the horse's diet doesn't just contain a certain amount of protein, but they have to have all of those individual amino acids. And so, again, this could be a potential opportunity in the future for hemp seed meal and that rich protein source to be included in horse diets. And so again, we've got water, we've got our carbohydrates, our fats, our proteins. The other two nutritional groups are vitamins and minerals. And so minerals are going to include things like calcium and phosphorus, our electrolytes, sodium, potassium, and chloride, magnesium, sulfur. And these are all minerals that are required in grams per day. And then we get into our micro minerals, things like copper and zinc and selenium and iodine. All of those are also going to be required in the horse's diet. And it's important to get a full nutritional profile of all of your ingredients so that you can see that when you include these in your horse's diet, they're actually meeting all of the needs. And then we've got our vitamins. And I'll be honest, I'm not sure of the specific breakdown of vitamins within a hemp seed, but I would presume it's got a decent amount of vitamin E. And so that's always a good one for it to have. And so when we think about an opportunity for hemp products, I think one of the largest opportunities is the oil. And this is because, as I mentioned, oil is an excellent source of calories. And so horses can, use oils very well. And when you start to look at feed tags for diets that are formulated for horses, for performance horses, for example, which might only be a, small portion, maybe 20% of all of the horses in the United States and Canada might be considered performance horses, because they have such high nutritional needs, they also consume the most feed. And so this is a huge, you know, niche market. And so if you look at the feed tags for feeds designed for commercial, for performance horses, you'll see that they have higher levels of fat included in the diet. And so if you look at a traditional feed for type of a maintenance horse, you might see, you know, maybe 6 to 8%. And then as you start to look for performance horse feeds, you'll see 8 to 12 to potentially even 14. And then oil can also be top dressed onto your horse's diet to provide additional calories as well. It's only sort of limited at 8 to 12% just for the manufacturing process. And the other oil that's commonly used for horse feeds is soybean oil. And a lot of people are very concerned with the potential phytoestrogens or GMO concerns that are associated with soybeans. In my opinion, there's not enough data out there to suggest that there is anything wrong with soybeans. My horse, you know, that's totally fine. But there are people who don't want to use those. And so if there was a different option out there, so for example, if a feed was marketed to have hemp seed oil instead of soybean oil, that would be an excellent opportunity for them. And so that would provide calories, but then also could provide these little niche omega-3 and omega-6, and then the gamma-linolenic acid as well. And then there's also potentially a niche market at some point for replacement of soybean meal, which is a huge component of horse diets, potentially with hemp seed meal as well. Now, it comes down to, you know, these ingredients need to be approved by AFCO before they can be included in horse diets and commercial horse diets. Now, from the supplement standpoint, supplements are totally unregulated and anybody can supplement with anything. And so, you know, there's that side of things. But if you want to sort of do things the correct way and go through and be included in, for example, a Purina or a Southern States or a Master's Feeds or any of these big products out there, those ingredients have to go through AFCO CVM. And so the two studies that that we want to do are to specifically, we're looking at oil for the first part, but we want to specifically show that oil is an effective energy source. All right. So in this point, we're not even looking at the omega-3s. That would be sort of an added bonus, but we want to prove that the oil is an effective calorie source. So the first part of the study is just going to compare or have different diets with different inclusion levels of the oil. And so basically we would be creating four different diets with different calorie densities. And so if a horse, and so it's sort of, you know, the control diet with, and then increasing amounts of hemp seed oil, and the horse that's consuming that highest level of horse hemp seed oil is consuming the most calories. And so that horse should gain weight over time. And so that's the best way to prove that something is providing calories for the animal, is to show that if you feed it in increasing amounts, that horse is going to gain weight. And so that's going to be the first part of the study. The second part would be to say, all right, well, let's say that, you know, this level of inclusion rate of hemp seed oil is sufficient to allow it to be an energy source. Then we have to go back and say, all right, well, is it as safe as the gold standard, which is used right now, which is soybean oil? And so we need to compare hemp seed oil to soybean oil and show that, you know, horses that are consuming this are going to have similar metabolic profiles, similar blood chemistry profiles, et cetera, to show that not only the first study is going to show that oil is an excellent source of calories, now we're going to show that that source of calories compared to soybean oil is going to be equivalent in terms of efficacy and safety. And so that's going to be the second part of that. So.
Awesome. I have a question really quick about what type of questions are being asked by the FDA CVM. What are they looking for?
So Morgan, you can chime in too, but So they want to know that the ingredient is effective as what it is intended for. So I had done a previous study with a particular form of a nutrient. And we needed to prove that that nutrient did a job in the body. And so we need to prove initially that oil is doing a job in the body as a nutrient. And so because oil, a fat, is a nutrient required by horses for calories at this point, we want to be able to show that hemp seed oil provides calories for a horse. And so we can do that by showing that if a horse consumes it, they are going to gain weight. The right. second part of it is they want to know that it's safe. And so that's actually a longer term study. The horses have to be on this for a relatively long period of time, consuming it at the rate that, you know, is going to be sort of approved or up to a high rate. And then you will be able to prove that, you know, it's safe to include comparison to soybean oil or any of the other oils that would be out there.
Yeah, and kind of the elephant in the room is cannabinoids, right? We know that there are levels, you know, at very low levels, but there are naturally occurring levels of cannabinoids. Hemp seed oil, you know, it's a hydrophilic compound, and so you will find it more in the oil than you would necessarily in the meal or the seed itself. But just because it's there, unfortunately, you know, it doesn't mean it's a problem, right? Or it's not safe. And so like Dr. Phillips talked about is like, we need to prove that it's safe. And that's really the compound that they are unaware of and they have the least familiarity with. And so they really want the industry to prove safety for cannabinoids. So obviously we don't consume horse meat here in the States, but it is, you know, still in practice. And so there is a level of diligence that we need to review of what is the accumulation of cannabinoids and the transference into the meat and tissue. So that will be part of the study as well. There is a lot of people working hard, multiple associations and companies that are trying to establish thresholds because unfortunately the response we've heard for the most part has been a zero tolerance policy, which is not logical and it's not realistic to what the ingredient potential is. And so I hope that doesn't scare anybody off, but you know, it's something that we have to endeavor to educate our regulators on. And they're also, we need to educate, you know, these associations for these performance horses, right? You know, we can tell people till we're blue in the face how great it is for their horse, but if this is a competing horse and there's a chance that this horse may be tested and current regulations, you know, have a strict policy against cannabinoids, you know, the market is going to be limited by that. So I think that that's, you know, on a parallel path, we need to be working and HFC has some connections to try to start that conversation. Because obviously performance horses, you know, I was able to go to the Derby this year and like the money that is spent there and like this, you know, these are professional athletes. And so, you know, those trainers are very concerned about what they're feeding their horses as they should be. And that, you know, like Dr. Phillips, you know, alluded to, that's probably the prime target horse that needs this oil are performance horses. Mm-hmm. So we need to do the science. We need to figure out what it is. But it doesn't mean that it's unsafe. It doesn't mean that, you know, it's a stumbling block. We need to answer the question. So.
Mm-hmm. I did want to answer a question that was the difference between hemp oil and corn oil. And so from a calorie standpoint, they are similar. All oils have about 9 megacalories per kilogram weight. There might be some, maybe one's 8.9, maybe one's 8.8. And then in terms of digestibility and how well the horse can actually use oils is quite good. And so there might be very, very minor differences in the digestible energy between different oil sources, but that's going to be very small. But for calorie per calorie, you know, if I have a horse, that I'm working with and they want to gain weight, whatever calorie source is cheap is the way to do it. But then there are the differences. So calorie for calorie, they're very similar and same with, you know, soybean oil, et cetera. The difference with the hemp seed oil compared to corn oil is the hemp seeds are going to have more of the polyunsaturated fatty acids, which are the good ones, the PUFAs. And they also have a higher proportion of omega-3 to omega-6 than corn oil. And then, of course, hemp also has that added benefit of that gamma-linolenic fatty acid as well, which is kind of one that's relatively unique specifically to hemp seed oil.
Awesome. Morgan, you want to kind of talk about the low-hanging fruit and the availability of the market now and potential future?
Yeah, so I think one of your viewers asked, like, you know, who does this, you know, what organizations does this benefit? And it really is across the supply chain, I think, that we see benefits. Obviously, some are going to be more than others. I like to start at the beginning of the supply chain with the producers. You know, if a producer can, if we can, as an industry, you know, monetize and valorize these ingredients with higher value markets, then that, you know, hypothetically should be trickling down to our producers. You know, we really try to get the most, you know, we try to compete at a bare minimum. This is a very competitive commodity season. So, you know, competing with wheat, competing with corn and soybeans. So it's really, it's making hemp more competitive in the existing market so that, you know, farmers can evaluate hemp as a rotation crop. They can diversify their operation. You know, it needs to make money for them at the end of the day. So this is a big opportunity to bring that money to them. Obviously the manufacturers, you know, IND Hemp included, you know, there's an opportunity to just increase the capacity and the volume of ingredients like oil or hulls, just have opening that market. And then like the retail brand market, you know, there's a big opportunity for people that want to spend the money to develop a brand, to reach the consumer, to educate the consumer. You know, I think that there's a huge opportunity for them there. And then the end distributor retailers, right? If you have more people buying these products, more wanting and you know, looking for hemp seed oil, right, you're going to find people that see value there too. So across the supply chain, like it really is a ripple effect. I think that like just opening the market, you know, we could, this same analogy could be applied to pretty much any other widget that hemp can be converted into. And obviously with, you know, at the beginning of any industry, we always try to look for the higher value just because we don't have economies of scale right now to compete in a lot of ways. Then you also had someone comment about Canada, which is a great example, right? You know, Canada has really seen some positive, optimistic results. I will reiterate, you know, dogs and cats, you know, companion animals and horses have been legal to feed in Canada. And so like you have a lot of the existing market right now. You know, NC State did a survey and they specifically targeted Canadian users because it's been open in the market and they've had years of experience using this ingredient and see really good results. HFC has an open relationship with the Canadian Hemp Trade Alliance. We sit on each other's meetings once a month. We go over some things. Since they don't have to go through the application process for horses, you know, they haven't necessarily been doing the studies that we need to leverage that information for our applications. We have really pushed regulators to start evaluating global studies because like it's not just horses, right? We could look at cattle, we could look at chickens. It's happening other places in the world. It seems awfully burdensome for US regulators to have such a narrow viewpoint of the studies that they will evaluate and keeping them all US focused. We don't have the time, we don't have the money, we don't have the resources to make that happen. And so we should be able to leverage existing studies that are published in, you know, scientific journals that have been peer reviewed. We should be able to use those for this analysis. And, you know, that's part of HFC's mission is to try to get all of this in front of these regulators to have the conversation, and, you know, just even the playing field a little bit.
Absolutely. Dr. Phillips, do you have anything you want to add to that?
No, I don't think so. I think the comment about it being used, feeding it to horses and stuff so extensively, it must be, I still don't think it's included on the Canadian feed ingredient list. So it must be still all sort of supplemented on top as opposed to as of an actual feed ingredient, if I'm not mistaken.
Yeah, maybe that's a nuance we can look into because, you know, from all everything I've heard and understood, it's been open in the market for several years.
Yeah. Well, and the guest did say there have been, he's got some good reports of marbling in the meat as well as the, you know, thicker coats. But okay, so I have a question then about how do our listeners really get involved? What, you know, you kind of mentioned it at the beginning. I shared the link for Hemp Feed Coalition. Morgan, you know, how do we really pull this together and get this to the market?
So there's a couple ways. Like the bare minimum is like become an HFC member, right? You know, it's $100 a year. It's very, you know, it may seem like another membership I have to worry about. Well, but this is a nonprofit organization. We don't have a budget. You know, these are volunteers all trying to do it. So even just running a certificate of analysis that's costing me, you know, $180 just to run one, you know, COA, that has to come from somewhere. And so, you know, at the bare minimum, becoming a member and donating that $100, you know, you get included in all our newsletters, you get up to date to that, we reach out to you. And then we invite you to participate in some of our work groups. So we have an equine work group. You know, so some of these things where if you want to know more, you want to talk to Dr. Phillips, you know, one-on-one, you have some questions, become an HFC member and like we can facilitate those conversations. We can help you network within the industry. And then ultimately, like, you know, to get this across the finish line, we need some big ticket donors, you know, and maybe they're not listening today. Maybe they are. But, you know, if you have connections, you know, people that's, you know, it's all about your return on investment, right? You've got to know somebody out there that sees a return on investment in this. Whether it's a horse that they know that like has been, you know, struggling with ulcers, or they want to be able to buy U.S. grown, U.S. manufactured hemp seed oil. They don't want to have to import it from Canada, to the owners of a, you know, a feed mill, right? You know, there's everyone has a return on investment on that. And I just encourage you guys to maybe share this interview, share this, you know, the Hemp Feed Coalition website, you know, reach out to me. Like I, that's my job as the executive director, is to articulate the value that HFC can bring to you or to your partners, and really think about how we can get Dr. Phillips, you know, get her study funded, because we need her to move forward. We need her to really start to analyze this at a very aggressive, intentional way, but that doesn't happen without some of those dollars. So at the bare minimum, you know, check out our website, look at the blogs, look at what we've got going on, and become a member. So,
okay. So we have a couple of questions that I want to get to. One, speaking specifically to Montana's growth, and I want to talk a little bit about what's happening there. But before we do, you know, we've talked a lot about what it does for our animals and for the equine vertical within the feed markets. But what about for like farmers and processors and everybody else that's using it? Everybody that's using the hemp and grain for the widgets and for auto body parts. How does this really impact that part of the market?
Yeah, so, you know, the hemp industry, and you look at the ingredients historically on a market base, you see this kind of roller coaster effect. Like one moment, like hemp seed oil is hot on the market and like it's selling for, you know, crazy amount. And then the next moment it's the protein, and then it's hearts and it's holes. And so like from a manufacturer's perspective, that's really challenging to build a business model over when we have this roller coaster effect of our ingredients. You know, ideally what we'd like to see is we'd like to see growth across all co-products. So we want to see people that are consuming oil more. We want to see people consuming holes more. We want to see hearts, right? And that maybe is a little bit too optimistic to think, but like that has a big ripple effect on all things. So I've heard from customers like, yeah, I love hemp seed oil, but like, I don't want to pay for it or whatever it is. Well, if as a consumer, if you want to see lower cost of goods for whatever the hemp ingredient that you want to buy is, then these co-products need to have higher value too. And so that's really important for, you know, manufacturers. And then it goes back to like buying the seed, right? If we can create more value for these co-products, then we can, you know, create more value for the seed going into the plant. And at the end of the day, I hope everyone listening, like, you know, we are sustainably conscious consumers. And so that we're hopefully building a supply chain here in the US that is conscious of these practices. You know, our carbon footprint is a reality that we're all facing right now. And, you know, hemp really speaks to that and growing acres. Like if at the end of the day, your only goal is to get 1 million acres of hemp in the ground. Well, guess what? That doesn't happen unless animal feed products get approved. That's a reality. And so like get on the boat or like quit talking about it, because you've got to have animal feed approved for like 1 million acres of hemp to be produced. So, you know, if we're talking about carbon footprint, we're talking about sustainability, we want to see hemp save the world. Well, part of that stepping stone is getting animal ingredients approved.
Yes. Well, and there's so much to be said to the profitability for fiber when there isn't any grain considered, or we're not growing for the grain side at all. And so, you know, I go back to our local feed market and, you know, all aspects of this plant and are impacted, or all of these different verticals are impacted by the plant and processing of hemp. And so They definitely all need to be elevated together.
From the farmer's perspective, they need a cash crop, right? They need to be able to make this monetarily, work on their operation. And a grain crop is far more competitive right now than the fiber market is. Like the fiber stock material just doesn't have as high a value as the grain does. And so you have to see really high performing fields for that, that commodity price to equate to a profitability and a revenue stream on your farm. On the opposite side of that, for grain, it's a higher value commodity. And so your performance, especially these beginning years when we're trying to figure out, which varieties works in which regions and finding a manufacturer to take your seed, that's just less of a risk because it's a higher value crop. And so I think that the grain side of hemp really is going to have to carry a lot of this growth while we establish the foundation and the infrastructure to support, a really well-established fiber supply chain.
I totally agree. And I hear that from bigger operations up in Canada, right? The value and the need for the grain side. And so I just want to put this out that this isn't just about animal feed. This affects every single piece of our industry. And so again, another huge value or shout out to please go support the Hemp Feed Coalition, become a member, donate. If you know large feedlots, let's connect them, get them behind us. I actually had a fabulous conversation this morning with somebody who has some great connections for you, Morgan. And so I will send them over and make sure that we connect to see if we can move this along also. Can you speak to me a little bit about what's happening in Montana? Talk to me about how many acres are planted. I saw a recent survey that went out from Frontier Data that put us at about 15,000 total acres for fiber planted. So I'm kind of curious about your perspective on the market and if you can speak to Montana.
Yeah. So for those who don't know, Montana's in this like crazy weather like sphere right now. We have parts of the state that are flooded. Yellowstone National Park is closed right now because the road was washed out. We have one of our farmers who lost 3 pivots because the river just completely came up. And so we have parts of the state that are like, in a disaster zone, right? This is FEMA we're talking about, addressing this. And then we have other parts of our states that are in extreme drought, that we had, very little snow this winter. Last year, we had an extreme drought. Grasshopper pressure was really serious. And so we knew going into this season that the sub-moisture in the soil just was not there. And so we've had more farmers in our area that have fallowed fields that they haven't fallowed in decades. And so it's like these two extremes across the state. I don't know what's going to happen for the end of the summer, but it definitely has played a huge role into how many acres of hemp is put in. And then you add on top of that, the war in Ukraine, which is one of the largest producers of wheat. Well, guess what? Montana is a huge wheat producer. And so the commodity prices of wheat up here have skyrocketed. And so a lot of guys that didn't plant winter wheat, we're looking at hemp as a spring crop, they're looking at spring wheat prices and we can't compete with that. So it's definitely been challenging. I don't want to stick to a number because I've heard 15,000, yeah. I've heard 6,000, it's all over. Yeah. I definitely think it's probably somewhere between 5,000 to 15,000 acres. There's more processors coming online, which is great. We had a cannabinoid boom just like every other state back in 2019, 2020 time. And that's really fallen off. I think we only have one or two processors, cannabinoid processors in the state now. But Montana is well situated because especially as a grain state, because our environment, we don't have the humidity that the Midwest does. And so maybe we don't have the moisture to get really high yielding fields. Maybe we're only looking at 600 to 800 pounds an acre, but we're also competing with commodities and yields that, are more relative to the area. We're not competing against corn and soy prices. And so the infrastructure in Montana is great. Most guys have on-site storage. They know how to use a combine. They know how to use a baler. And so it's really kind of drop and go hemp production style here in Montana.
I love it. Well, we are just about out of time. And I know that I want to be respectful of everybody's calendars. Dr. Phillips, do you have anything else you want to add to the message? Or what maybe should people be paying attention to as we really start to evolve this opportunity and market?
I think just that, the CBD or, that's sort of perhaps, it's a whole different side of things.
Yes.
I think from a food ingredient, the oil and the fiber portion, the protein portion has got such a huge opportunity in so many different parts of a horse's diet. And if you look at a feed tag and you look at the ingredients, there are so many places where hemp products could actually fit in. And right now we're just focusing on the oil, but that is just really the tip of the iceberg, because the meal and the fiber, you know, could replace beet pulp or soybean meal or so many different things. And I just think that's, it could really blow up and have, you know, a lot of foods really based on hemp. So it's just the starting point.
Absolutely. Morgan, anything else? Anything else you want to close up with? We have just a couple minutes. Any other questions? If you guys that are listening have any and you want to get them in real quick, please don't hesitate to ask. But yeah.
I would just say really, really thank you to Dr. Phillips. You know, I know that you aren't necessarily drank the hemp Kool-Aid quite yet. We'll get you there once we get this study going. But, you know, it's experts like Dr. Phillips, like I hope that you recognize that like HFC and GHA, like we want to reach outside of the hemp industry to pull other people that like are experts in their field, because we need their insight. We need to know where hemp can play and can fit. We need them to advocate. Like our industry needs to grow outside of the pocket that we're in right now. Yes. We need to start mingling with people in the corn and soybean industry. We need to start mingling with the Purinas and whatnot. And so it really takes, you know, it just adds such authenticity and I think just reinforces the work that we're doing when we can bring people like Dr. Phillips on. And so really, really appreciate your time and willingness to speak to this. It's huge value.
Absolutely. Well, and I'll echo what you just said, right? We get stuck talking to our own echo chamber. And really where I see the big value is addressing those concerns head on and looking at them to present real data instead of, you know, we have done a disservice also in promising that hemp can save the world. And so being realistic and bringing professionals in, it is really where it grows the backbone for our industry. And so, yes, thank you very much for participating. And Morgan, thank you. And thanks to the Hemp Feed Coalition and IND Hemp, not only for sponsoring and all your all that you've contributed to the industry, but for your efforts specifically around this topic. And so how do people reach out to either of you through the Hemp Feed Coalition specifically website?
Yeah, you can do that. My email too is also pretty simple. It's just morgan@indhemp.com. I can throw that in the chat. And you know, we have our own equine line. So if any of you guys are out there like, hey, I want to try this, you know, like reach out to me, you know, we send you guys some samples. You know, I strongly believe people become their own believers when they use it. So we have a hemp herd animal bedding product. We have oil, protein, and hulls. This is our protein super snacks here. So, you know, if you guys just want to try it for yourself, like shoot me a message and I'll send some over to you. So
I actually would. Let's connect after this because I've got a huge farm here that we've been talking to with some students that I've engaged through one of our universities. And I'll tell you, if my job ends tomorrow, I've done my job by exciting these students at the university who had no idea, with the capability of picking up the bag and reading for themselves, but the stigma was so bad that they wouldn't touch that bag, you know, to even read the info. And so I'm so proud of what they're doing and about their effort that they're putting in to help grow the market and kind of learn about the market. But with that being said, thank you very much for joining. Dr. Phillips, thank you very much for your time. Next week, we have a networking meeting where we log in through Zoom. It's on Tuesday at 11 o'clock a.m. Mountain Time. Bye, Dr. Phillips. 11 o'clock Mountain Time. You can find it on our website, globalhempassociation.org, but it's a great opportunity to get together and actually network. And then two other interviews, same time on Wednesday and Thursday next week. So I look forward to seeing you guys there. And Morgan, thank you again for your time.
Yeah, thank you, Mandy. Really appreciate it.
Absolutely. We'll talk later.
Thanks.
Thank you.